on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening. Welcome to show 200 of the Orient Hour, live from Brentwood on Phoenix 98 FM.
For all the listeners of the Leighton Orient Hour, this is Nigel Travis. Happy that we've just won 6 points in two games and celebrating also the Orient Hour's 200th episode. The podcast does a great job of representing the club, challenging us with some different thoughts, and most of all, keeping interest alive around the world. So congratulations again and keep up the great work.
Congratulations, Orient Hour, on 200 episodes. Fantastic accomplishment. And thanks for all of the information that you've given to the supporters and the community about Leighton Orient Football Club. And especially thanks to each of you that have spent so much time making Orient Hour such a great program. So thanks for everything. Up the O's.
Hello, this is a message for everybody, I suppose, connected to, but those that listen to the Orient Hour. Congratulations on your 200th episode. Fantastic achievement to get to that landmark. So congratulations to everybody and well done to everyone that's been involved in driving it on and pushing it to the level that it has done to reach that. So hope the show goes well, first and foremost. Always enjoy my time coming on or being part or contributing to the Orient Hour. I suppose I do every week in terms of the team that I put out, whether that's for the good or the bad. But congratulations. Enjoy the episode, and here's to another 100, eh? Take care.
Well, thanks, Ross. Thanks, Nigel, and thank you, Kent. And welcome, everybody, to Show 200. Coming up in a little while, we'll have former player and former manager Tommy Taylor joining us live on the line. In the meantime, we've landed Barry Galvin and Darren Burrows. Good evening, both. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Great to be here for the 200th show, Andy. So, really looking forward to this one.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, glad to be. And just a note on those three lovely audios we just heard. They did seem surprised that we reached 200, didn't they?
They did.
And Ross was only saying, here's to the next 100. And I think he's putting a limit on it, Andy, you know?
Oh, he might be putting a limit on me, I think.
but, it sounded quite incredulous that we've made it, didn't they?
Yeah, don't blame them. And Barry, you should take some credit for the great commentary you did the other night that overrode anything that the television put out.
Yeah.
Anybody heard hit, hit, hit before Johnston's effort? It was Mr. Galvin.
It was me, and there was no one more surprised than me, because as you know, Andy, on the gantry where we are and where you formerly were, this camera next to us is generally for pictures only, isn't it? And I didn't know why that would change. But yes, I'm a fan. Yes, it's an empty stadium, unfortunately, at the moment. And obviously, you're a fan, and you react as fans would. And yes, that was me. Go on, Danny, get in, etc. That was me. I make no apologies for my supporting the club, but I'm sorry if it was a little one-sided on Sky and YouTube, etc.
Been a good week though, Darren. I mean, back-to-back wins, two clean sheets, and the club up into the top 10. What a wonderful few days.
Oh, it's been a fantastic weekend, isn't it? I mean, I think that's what the first time in 5 years we've won back-to-back games, or three games, and I think first time since 2013 we've won Tuesday Saturday at home. So
you're full of information.
Yeah, I've got decorators working in my house at the moment. We're Orient fans. I only employ people who support Orient these days. And one of the lads was filling me in with this earlier, so I thought, well, I'll use that later on the show. So I've got that in. So thanks, Dave.
Well, also talking about stats, that when I was with Dave Victor the other day, said that last time Leighton Orient beat Bradford City at home, that Matt Hiscock was 5 years old. So there's another stat for you. But we did it last night, so that's all gone. But yeah.
It's how to make you feel old, this, isn't it? Yeah. Let's have a listen. Talking of Matt and Dave, let's get their view of the last couple of matches even.
Well, back-to-back home wins, Matt, changes everything. And it's three clean sheets now in terms of league matches here at the Bray Group Stadium.
So important, isn't it? And say tonight wasn't a great spectacle, if truth be told, but such an important victory. 1-0, scrappy game at times, but you just want to make sure you come out on the right side of those type of games of football, and Orient did so tonight.
This season, the O's are sort of grinding out results in a way that we haven't seen before, and Dan Happy's first of the season was an important one.
It was an important one. It was a great leap, and he had an excellent game yet again. Continues to go from strength to strength, but the delivery from Maguire Drew, give him credit as well. It had some real quality about it with the left foot, the way it was whipped in, but Dan Happy, it was all about determination to get up, a strong header, a good header, and an important goal.
Saturday was all about the superstar DJ, Dan Johnson.
Yeah, it was a fantastic day, wasn't it? So the only disappointment, the fans weren't here to see it, but a hat-trick for Danny Johnson, who again continues to show all the quality that he possesses. Really different hat-trick as well in terms of the goals, the finishing. The first one was an excellent finish, low and hard across the goalkeeper. The second one was just a brilliant bit of skill on the volley, top corner. And the third one, losing his marker in the penalty box, a simple header in the end. He made it look simple, but I can assure you it wasn't. A great hat-trick from Johnson.
We're on the road now on Saturday. 1 o'clock kickoff. I understand that's because of sort of lunch arrangements and such like.
Yeah, strange, isn't it? The times we're living in, I guess. But I suppose for the Orient perspective, yeah, it's an early start for the players. But of course, they'll be back here early, so it gives them a little bit more time to recuperate, repair, prepare themselves for the next game.
And they go there with confidence, and they'll go there looking to improve on the league table. And the league table's been transformed since that Colchester game, now eighth.
Well, it has, and the hosts on Saturday, Port Vale, they're on a really difficult run at the moment. They started the season, were very impressive, but certainly in the last few weeks they've really struggled. They lost again tonight at Stevenage, so they're under a little bit of pressure. It should be a good game. I expect an open game. I expect goals.
And finally, Matt, it's good to hear a little bit of positive news about supporters returning to football, and certainly the faithful have enjoyed it in the last couple of home games.
Yeah, we should know in the next 48 hours exactly what that means, I guess, from a Leighton Orient perspective, in terms of what tier London will be in. We understand if it's tier 2, then of course it'll be up to 2,000 supporters here. You just want to avoid the danger zone of tier 3, of course, which would restrict any supporters returning. But it's a step in the right direction. I think it's a surprise, if truth be told. I'm not sure any of us were expecting that return so soon. But as I say, it's a step in the right direction. It's important to get fans back. back safely, and hopefully we can do that.
It does feel safe. I mean, looking at the preparations that all the clubs that we've been to have made in anticipation of supporters coming back, and Leyton Orient is ready, and the faithful are ready, and let's hope we see them soon. Thanks, Matt.
Cheers, Dave.
Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you, Dave, for that. And we will actually, as we're celebrating the 200th, really just publicly thank Dave Victor, because, as you know, we had the lockdown in March, and Dave and myself spoke, and we thought we'd put on some extra shows. And Dave's worked tirelessly since, getting lots of interviews for us. And I think you'd agree, Dave's interview techniques are fantastic. He's very relaxing with the person, and they answer and open up quite a lot, really. And we get a lot from the guests when Dave's involved. And it's professionalism. I can only applaud and thank him very much for everything he's done with this show this year. It's immeasurable, the amount of help we've had from Dave Victor. Anyway, as they were saying, Barry, the crowds may be back, and it's a May with a capital M at the moment. We all wait to see what tier we're in and whether there will be tiers.
Yeah, people were talking about it yesterday and saying, you know, what a great thing it would be to have even a limited number of fans back in the stadium, because, as we've mentioned before, you know, I'm not being a genius here, but it's just not the same without the fans. The football, you know, is physically the same. The ball's being played the same way, but it's just not the same atmosphere. And hopefully it will be Bristol Rovers we're talking about in the Cup. We're yet to see what tier we're going to be in, so whether it'll be 2,000 or 4,000 is a dream. I don't think it'll be 4,000, but... It will be a great day, won't it?
Well, Barry,
you know,
I think
it's 8 months we've been missing it.
You know, it's a cup that you normally couldn't give tickets away for, and here you are. I think there'll be a mass brawl to try and get one.
Yeah, I don't think it matters what the competition is. People will be missing the live football. They're missing live sport,
yeah.
And the social aspects of it too. I know it's going to be socially distanced, and you're not going to be able to hug and jump all over people. But it will just be amongst like-minded people in a crowd watching a live game of football. Is being sorely missed, and I think that will be, it will be a lottery to get the tickets, but there will be winners.
I mean, I think, Darren, I think it's not so much where people are sitting. I think it's pretty, easy for Orient to sprinkle 2,000 people around a stadium, especially in little family groups, etc. It's the getting in and getting out, isn't it?
I think that, fortunately, we've got quite a lot of good perimeter space on most of the stands, haven't we? Certainly in the west,
can open up the sides, can't you?
Yeah,
you know, where the gates are.
And I think that the club are very good at organising these things these days. I think the stewarding's first rate. So I'm not too concerned about that, Andy, if I'm honest. And I think people will be very understanding, because as Barry said, we're all desperate to get back in, aren't we? So if I've got to queue up for an hour to get in that stadium, I'd be the quickest hour of my life.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be, they're muted, timed entrances, timed exits. I mean,
I for one don't care, Andy.
Yeah.
I'll be a good boy, I'll behave, and I'll stand there till the steward tells me I can and can't go.
Well, I'm sure it's something the club's looking at, but I mean, I must say that they've got, just under 4,000 season ticket holders, I think I'm right on that.
I think it's just under, yeah.
Just under. So therefore, if it's 2,000, I would have thought, literally, I'm being simplistic, but tickets 1 to 2,000 one match, and ticket 2,000 to 4,000
the
second. But
you and I had this conversation a little bit on Twitter, didn't we? And we were both of the same opinion,
A ballot may result in Darren getting it this time and I miss out, and Darren gets it next time and I miss out, and Darren gets it.
That's,
and
in the traditional sense of a ballot, that would happen. So your idea makes more sense, I think.
I think in fairness, I was a bit harsh on the club when I first sort of saw the ballot. And I think give them a bit of time. They got something out quickly, maybe a bit too quick, if I'm honest. But I think when I read it again, I thought, actually, I'm being a bit harsh here. They generally get most things right these days. And I sound like I'm a sycophantic fan, but I generally feel that they'll get that right.
Well, they've got to sit, and it's got to be seen to be fair, whatever it is.
Absolutely. It's got to be transparent, and it's got to be fair.
You know, you can say, well, tickets 1 to 2,000, but you might get 500 and say, well, I can't come that game. Well, tough. That you had your chance. It now moves to the next.
Exactly. I've been lining something up to do on a Saturday morning with work, and I'm thinking, I know what's coming here. I'm going to have to go out to work on a Saturday morning for the first time in 25 years.
Yeah. So, about Darren, for most of us, it's B&Q or football. So I think most of us would prefer the football. The missus will always find some work for you to do if you stay around too long.
I've discovered
that. Don't stand still. That's a secret. Don't stand still.
Look like you're busy.
Yeah. Make like you're busy. Yeah. Always. But as I say, this is something that the club's got to look at. And, I don't feel comfortable about this ballot myself. I mean, they may change their minds. They may expand on it a bit more. But of course, the bottom line is, it's going to be the local authority that make the call, isn't it?
Yeah, we find out tomorrow, don't we, what tier we're going to be in. So I think we're all going to be waiting with bated breath, hoping that we're in win. I think it's tier one, isn't it?
You don't want to be in tier three, do you?
No, definitely not.
There'll be no crowds at all.
Another interesting thing, I think, is, guys, is that we've gone from a situation of having no fans in the stadium, okay, to having only home fans in the stadium. So we've gone from that situation, but no one's really seen before, apart from behind closed doors, friendlies, etc., where it's just that sterile atmosphere, to having a partisan crowd in a stadium. So that's going to be different as well.
It will be odd. There's no two ways about it. It's not going to be what we're used to. But I think we're all keen to get back in, and I think we're all overlook things like the fact that we've got no away support, the fact that we're going to have to possibly sit in our seats for 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever. I think we'll all be fine, if I'm honest with you, about on that one. I speak for myself, but I think most Orient fans are a decent bunch. So,
okay, well, hopefully, on the end of the line, if everything's working and the buttons are working, we should have Tommy Taylor. Good evening, Tommy.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good man. Well, thanks for joining us, Tommy, on our 200th show. We do appreciate it. And you're just back from India, aren't you?
I come back a few months ago when the COVID come up, so I got back. I'll come back to England a bit quicker.
Don't blame you. Don't blame you. So, where are you based now? Because you up Cambridge Way or?
No. I'm in between Northampton and Leicester.
Oh, right. So quite some distance away.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you were a reasonably local lad when Orient took you on right back in 1966. How did that come about, Tom?
How did it come about? The scouts would come out. I used to play for Paul Church, the district side, and they took all the 12 of us to go down the train at Leyton Orient, all the district team. And from that, they picked about four or five of us to keep going backwards and forwards. Yeah, that was the start of it.
And at the time, I think the club were in severe financial problems, weren't they, around that time?
I don't know. I don't know. I used to come down. We used to get on the train at Elm Park, come down to Mile End, get the district, and then get the district line across to Leyton. Then we used to get our bit of money to go back home, and that was our expenses. And I think something one and six to get back home and things like that.
Yeah, for younger listeners, that's 7.5p. So give you an idea.
Yeah.
Right, so I mean, so you were there from 1966 to 1970. When did you actually sign full-time pro, Tom?
I was still an apprentice when I was still playing in the first team. When we won the championship, I was still an apprentice.
Wow.
So I said to Jimmy Bloomfield, will I get the bonus what the first team the boys were on? He went, no, you're still an apprentice, Tommy, you can't have it. I went, thanks very much, Jim.
So you were part of a championship winning side, and not many Orient players can say that. And
yeah.
At the time, what was an apprentice wage? I mean, what was it, about £6,
£7?
£7.
Yeah.
And you got no bonus at all for promotion?
No,
how many games do you think you played that season? I haven't checked, but
I played all 46 games. Yeah.
So I've got Barry Galvin and Darren Barrows in the studio here, but I mean, guys, I think Tommy got turned over there, didn't he?
Oh, it's cheap labour, isn't it? There's rules against that nowadays, Tommy. I think. Yeah.
£7. Oh dear, oh dear. That would be music to Kent and Nigel's ears, that wouldn't it, if they could get away with that one? get a team promoted on £7 each. So, I mean, who are the sort of players you were playing with then, going back to those early days of your career, Tommy?
Ray Goddard was the goalkeeper. And then Terry Mancini, Dave Harper, Peter Braybrook, Mark Lazarus. I mean, that them two there was unbelievable. Mark Lazarus used to jump in the stand and run the full length over the far side. And then all of a sudden he'd come out by the corner flag and we had a throw on and he took the throw on or something like that. It was hilarious. You could see him through the crowd as the game was going on.
I mean, he went on to have a removal business, didn't he, Mark Nazareth. Yeah, I mean, I played in a charity match against him once, and he still could play. You know, he was about 60.
No, he was a good player. Mark. He was a very good player.
Yeah, and Peter Braybrook too, of course, played in the world. Was it in the England side for the 1958 World Cup finals? Wasn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, so I mean, he would have been a good. He was coming to the end of his career then, of course, but it still been a good grounding and a good learning for you, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, he was. The pair of them were really good at with the young players. I mean, there was Dennis Rolfe and myself, and Barry Fairbrother were getting into the team as well. So they looked after us.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously for what was a third division side at the time going up, several of the players went on to better things, didn't they, yourself included?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't realise that the morning I walked in I was going to go anywhere. And I walked past the office. And next morning I was banging on the window. I said, Tommy, does he know I'm fucking walking past his room? He said, come in. So I walked past and went into his office. He went, don't want your training today. I went, okay, I'm only 19. Yes, so I said, okay, why is that? He said, I've sold you. I went, you've sold me? Well, you sold me to. He said, I've sold you to West Ham.
Wow, that's a move, isn't it?
I said, what if I don't want to go? He went, you got to go, we need the money. I went, okay. Okay.
How much did you go for, do you know?
I think it was 90,000.
No, it was a fair sum in those days, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was a good amount of money that day, yeah. But they with that, they got the player as well. It done very well for them, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, you gone over to the West Ham side, and of course at that time they would have had Moore and Hurst would still be there, wouldn't he? And Peters, etc.
I played with Moore for about 6 or 7 years, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, they've had a pretty strong side, and didn't Jimmy Greaves would have made his debut?
Jimmy Greaves come there as I got there as well.
Yeah, I was going to say you must have started.
Martin Peters went to Tottenham.
Tottenham, yeah.
And I think Jimmy Greaves come to West Ham.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he would have scored on his debut, wouldn't he?
I think
he always did. I think he did for West Ham as well, actually. I think he did for Tottenham and for Chelsea, etc. Yeah, so, but I mean, you had a good time with West Ham. It's not a club, of course, on the Orient Show, which is a bit of a blasphemous word, but we will discuss West Ham, because obviously you had a successful career with them. I mean, you won the FA Cup and you played in the European final.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I enjoyed myself there. Good bunch of players there. We was nearly all, I would say, like nine out of the boys were all London boys. So it was very close knit, and everybody got on well with each other.
So there's a lot of socialising afterwards around.
No. We used to go and all have a drink together. And then we used to go our own different ways.
All right. Yeah. So any outstanding memories? Come back to the Orient just for a moment. And your first spell there, was there any outstanding match, outstanding memory that comes to the fore when you look back? Or is it all a bit of a blur now?
At the Orient?
Yeah.
Every game I played, I enjoyed it so much. I mean, the pitch was horrendous. I used to be there early in the morning putting sand on the pitch before I played.
Wow!
After the boys played the YTO their game in the morning, the YTS boys, we had to go on the field and put the sand down and things like that. Put the balls down, get the barrows across it, put the sand down for the first team game. Yeah.
Yeah, not the sort of thing that would go on nowadays. That's for certain. So, I mean, was there a match that stood out for you at all? That you think that's the one I remember the best?
No, I enjoyed every game at the Orient. It was one of those things. It was. When I first went there, the crowds were unbelievable. We used to have 16,000 people there. I know people who never had 16,000, I'll tell you that. And the crowds, the tannoy used to come over, thanks very much, everybody, for 5,000 people turning up.
Yeah, the famous turnstile wasn't working again, yeah.
There's more than 5,000 people here today.
I think that went on for a few more years after you left. Yeah, dear, oh dear. I mean, just after you joined West Ham, you broke into the international squad for the under-23s, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
So you
went straight into there. So I was quite lucky there. Yeah.
I mean, 13 caps, and you never, unfortunately for you, you just couldn't get over the line into the main setup, could you?
I was subbed versus Scotland on Bobby Moore's 100th game.
Oh. And, how close was that?
yeah. It was because the under 23 game was called off because of snow in Scotland. And Alf said to me, "We want you to come on the bench. And just be a bit, you know, just in case anything happens, I want you to come on." So I said, "That's great." I said, "I ain't travelled all the way for nothing then. At least I'm going to sit on the bench and watch a game." And that was Morrow's 100th game for England.
Oh, you'd have thought they'd let you on for 5 minutes at the end, wouldn't you?
Just no, to get I was cap. Happy to sit on the bench. I was pleased.
I mean, it's a fair achievement. I mean, the 13 under 23 caps is a fair effort. Now, I mean, what led to you coming back to the Orient? I mean, you were at West Ham for 9 years?
9 years. My thing was I was travelling down the same road, seeing the same people every day, and I just said, I went to John and John Lowe, and I just said, "John, I just want to have a change now. I've been coming down the same road and everything for, you know, 9 years. I just want to change again." He said, "Well, okay. Where do you want to go?" I said, "I don't mind. Where I go?" I said, "I just want to change."
Yeah.
And that was it.
And how was... You had three different managers there in that first 13 years. You had obviously Bloomfield, and you've had John Lyle and Ron. And so how different were they as managers?
Jim was like, they was all hands-on, to tell you the truth. I mean, Jim played as player manager. He was unbelievable. He was unbelievable. Jim was. He was like a family man to all the players. Ron Greenwood was upstairs, but he had his tracksuit on every day. He was on the training ground every day. And when John Lowe took over, he just took over and that was it. But everybody knew their job at West Ham at the time.
Yeah. Did you take any of them with you when you made your own move into manager? Did you take a part of each of them, or did you just be your own man?
No, I think it's just one of those things where you go, I know what players want, I know what they need, and I try to give them the best I can. And that's all you can do. And just try to win as many things as you can.
So they've said, you said you don't want to walk down the same road anymore. So how did you find out the Orient would take you back?
Jim was back there and he rang me up straight away and asked me to see if I wanted to come back. And that was it. I said, "Yeah, I'll come back. That's fine. I'm happy with that."
And it was a pretty lengthy stay, really. Three years, 116 league appearances again. And
when it was after like 2 years, we knew something was wrong with Jim, he had a bit of trouble there and with himself, you know, because he got cancer, and when he passed away, it just killed everybody.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you had a good relationship with him, which is why you came back, of course, obviously. Yeah. And
we had a good team there as well.
Yeah.
We had a good team together.
Well, obviously, Orient have been through, obviously it wasn't a protracted illness like Jimmy's, but they've been through that loss, obviously, with Justin Edinburgh, which we've covered, obviously, in depth on here. So, I mean, in the same sort of way, how difficult was it? You know, you're talking from your own experience now, when you've got somebody that you looked up to in, say, Jimmy Bloomfield, and there were several of the younger players that obviously looked up to Justin. How difficult was it, you know, is it for you to motivate yourself when something like that comes along?
Well, you just do it for them. That is it. You do it for the team and you do it for that person as well. Just go out there and work your balls off, mate, for them.
Yeah, I mean, the club at the time was obviously an established second division side, but unfortunately, just towards the end, Ken Knighton came in, and I mean, he had a record really for, you know, a bit of a disciplining area, and was that the wrong approach in light of the fact that the previous manager's passed away, and should he have been a little bit more softly, do you think?
No, I mean, people's got their own ways they want to do things, and he was, that was the way he set about the thing. that's all they said. Darren.
Tommy, when Kane came in, you know, controversial this, but was there a north-south thing, do you think? Was there, because it didn't work under Kane.
You're saying that I went to Darlington and that's what the chairman said to me. We can't have a southerner. I said, you just took me on, but now you don't want a southerner taken. It was hilarious, honestly. It was hilarious.
So, I mean, you've had 3 years at the Orient, and then you shot off to Belgium for a year and played over there.
I had great time in Belgium. Bierschot signed me. I went over to Bierschot. It was like new enough pre-season for them, and they said we'd like you to play in a game in Holland. I played a game straight away. I come off at half time. We want to sign you. I said okay. And I stayed there for a year and a half, and that was it, really.
Yeah,
maybe a bit more than that. Then I come back, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, did you make a decision to hang up your boots then, or...?
No. What it was, the chairman said to me when I was in Belgium, this is the exact words what he said to me, we believe you're going to play in Italy. I went, am I? Yeah, we've been told that a club in Italy want to take you on and play in Italy. I went, do they? So I went, I'll tell you what I do. I said, if you think that, I'll leave now and I'll go back to England and play. I'd rather play non-league football than go to and do anything else. So let me. And they've still got my registration over at Bierschot, so I couldn't play anywhere else in the world.
So you went into, was it Charlton first of all with the youth set up?
With the youth team, I had a great youth team there, and we got maybe six or seven into the first team. There are some great youngsters there, really good youngsters there.
So who are some of the players you worked with there then in the youth team?
Robert Lee, Kimballs. Yeah. I tell you the truth, I can't remember all their names, but I had such a good team there.
Yeah, Robert was a good player, wasn't he?
On the Friday afternoon, I used to take him in the police cells at the ground, and we used to have fights in there. We had to put the boxing gloves on.
I know, I've heard about this.
And we used to have fights in there. It was great fun. And one day, on one Friday, I went, right, everybody put your gloves on, you can all bash me to pieces. I'll be on there, go on, and if I hit you, watch yourself.
Do you think you'd get away with that nowadays, Tom?
No. You can't do anything.
It was going round the ground. Do you hear Tommy Taylor? He makes some box.
I got him in the police cells, and the two Kimball brothers beat shit out of each other. They just wanted
to win. We'll let that one go. Yeah, sorry about that word. We're before the watershed, Tommy. We've got to be careful. Sorry. Oh, dear. So, anyway, so you've come out the youth team there, and... where's your first, main go-up manager, being a manager?
I went over from there. I spoke to Lenny. Lenny Lawrence was the manager at Charlton. And I had a phone call from New Zealand. I'm sound asleep one night, like 3 o'clock in the morning, the phone goes, hello, Tommy, how are you? I'm from New Zealand. We've got a club. We'd like you to come over and take our team in New Zealand. I thought someone's mucking about. I went, okay, send me a ticket and I'll come over. 2 days later, there was only a ticket coming through the door.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And I thought, right, yeah. So I went to Lenny. I went, Len, people in, there's a club in New Zealand, want me to go over there and take them. He went, teams that, Tommy, go over there. If you like it, take it. If you don't like it, come back. You've still got your job.
Can go wrong.
Yeah. So I said, you don't mind it. He said, no, go and see it, what it's about. And we'll go from there. I went, okay, thanks very much.
And you had and 3 years, didn't you?
I stayed there for about 3 or 4 years. But the football wasn't getting any better over there, the way football was going. So I just made my way back.
You came back here and you was at Margate, wasn't it? Was that an end off to Cambridge?
Yeah, I went to Margate. It was one of those... it was a job, and I went down there and tried to do a job from. It's hard to do the non-league jobs if you haven't got good contacts with good with the right players.
Yeah. So you went off to Cambridge, and that, I mean, you stepped into the role there, but it didn't last that long before you got a phone call from Barry Hearn.
I was with the youth team, and I got Reg Smart was the chairman, which I really got on really well with him as when I was with the youth policy, and I had some really good players. I earned a lot of money out of quite a few of the players there as well, and Reg Smart went the manager was doing his job, and then he said, "I want you to help the manager out with it, you know, help the manager." I said, "Well, he hasn't asked me to help him. I don't really want to step in and do anything behind his back." He went, "I'm asking to just be with him on the bench and things like that." I said, "Okay then, but I want him to come to me and say, yeah, okay, come sit with me on the bench and I'll be happy." But we went along, and then suddenly the manager was let go and I took over. We was almost relegated as it was. And I think I went like 5 or 6 games without getting beat, but we just missed out by going down, I think. So it was unlucky. But we had the youngest team in the Football League when I took over then. I had all the young players coming in, and they'd done a great job. And even when I left, we was like second or third in the league.
Yeah, I was going to say, you were second. So how did it come out, the move to Warren? How did it come about?
I got to say, I met Barry Hearn, and he's the most, I would fucking run over the moon for him. He was one of those people.
Right.
He was unreal, the man. He's the best chairman I ever had, anyway. Best chairman by miles.
I suspect he might be listening to this. He'd be very happy with that.
His wife was, she gave me so much stick after every game. It was unreal. I used to go in the dress in the boardroom after going, "Baz, he was okay, but she gave me so much stick," and I just said, "Yeah, carry on."
So you came in, you brought Paul Clark with you, and Paul had been had managerial experience himself, didn't he, at Southend as player manager?
I had him at Cambridge as well. He was great to work with.
Yeah, he was a very easy guy to talk to, wasn't he?
Yeah,
and I think, you know, stepping from the outside, you were not chalk and cheese, but two very different sort of people. And I suppose between the two of you, it worked, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I listened to him. I said, "What do you think? We should do this now." I said, "Fair enough. Get it done then." And one game, I took. He said, "You're mad." He said to me, "You're mad. You're putting all forwards on." I said, "Well, we've got to win the game, haven't we?" and we finished up winning the game at Cambridge. He said, I couldn't have done that, what you've done there today. I said, "Well, it doesn't matter. We was losing. We might as well go for it, mate."
Well, a lot of people wanted to know, and I mean, we won't read out every single question we got, but a lot of people wanted to know, how difficult was it managing somebody like Carl Griffiths?
Carl was fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, I had no trouble with Carl whatsoever. We got on really well. There was a couple of things. I mean, he was on the bonus to score goals, and it was one of those things. Right, Carl, you've hit your target. Well done. Can you get some more? How much more money will I get than this
guy? Oh dear.
So I said, I have to talk to the chairman about it. He went, okay. Yeah, it was one of those. It was one of those with Carl. He was a goal scorer, mate. He was a sniffer. He was like Greasy.
I mean, we got to that 1999 season when we got to the final at Wembley. And was there anything you'd have done differently on the day? If you could turn back the clock, was there any difference you'd have done with the lineup or the formation or anything? I mean, or was it one of those days?
I always played a five. And a couple of games before that, we had to go to a four because I had a couple of injuries. Some of the players might have said, "Oh, we should have stayed as a four." If you won it, nothing would have been said because I didn't win it. So, saying, but you know, other people had their opinions, and that is it. I had to go to I thought was my strongest players, who'd been there nearly all season,
getting us to that position.
Yeah, I mean, when I spoke to Martin Ling about it, I think he was of the opinion that too many players actually froze. You know, just the whole occasion just got a little bit too much for some of the players, and you didn't expect them to. I remember Stuart Hicks falling over with nobody near him, and you know, things like that. You know, and the players you expected to, you know, rise to the occasion probably just didn't get going, did they?
Yeah, but, I mean, when you're at places like Wembley, you just got to take the game and not worry about where you're playing. Just go out there and play the game. And you know, some of them, it might have got to some of them, but it didn't get to everybody. But we did win the game, and that was one of those things.
Darren,
yeah. Do you remember the Scunthorpe?
Sorry,
game?
I'll turn your mic up; it'll help.
Thanks, Tommy. The Scunthorpe game before, where we won on penalties.
Yeah.
We heard as fans that they were selling tickets to Wembley. And that part of your team talk that day was to announce to the players that this lot think they've already won it. Is there any truth in that? Or is that just
Yes, that was my team talk.
It worked.
Boys, they've got Wembley tickets to go to Wembley already.
And then the Chris Tate goal up at the Millennium Stadium, fastest goal ever. Well, after he popped that in, after 30 seconds, I think it was.
27.
I knew you'd correct me, Andy. What went through your mind, Tommy? What was going through your mind at the time? Do you remember that?
No,
fair enough.
We remember it, don't we? I remember it.
The game is so much more to be played. You just take things as they come along, and that is it.
I mean, that... I think, personally speaking, I found the first defeat in the first playoff final far more disappointing than the second one. I mean, all defeats are disappointing, but I just felt that, you know, the first one, we all knew we had the better team, and it just didn't happen on the day. I mean, the second match, I think in the end we were beaten. Well, you might disagree, but I think in the end they had a slightly better side than us, I think.
On the right-hand side, the winger kept coming inside to leave the space for the fullback to go down the outside and things like that, and we talked about it, about letting him come inside, and we pick him up as he runs inside, and the fullback can stay there and pick the run up coming down the outside. But it didn't happen. That's how they scored the goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think if any a game turned on something, it was that shot, wasn't it, Jabbo, where he hit the post instead of it going in at 2-2, and I think they went on and got the goal within a few minutes and took the lead for the first time, and from that moment on it drifted away from us. But I mean, it's all ifs, isn't it? But if that had gone in, who knows what would have happened, and who knows what would have happened with yourself. I mean, Darren, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tommy, after we lost that game, did the relationship with the chairman and at some point you left the club, and you know, could you sort of tell us how that came about?
I never had an argument with the chairman, never, because if I asked for something, he let me have it. I could understand when he asked me to go over and see him on a Sunday morning. I knew what was coming, but I could understand that because the crowd was starting moaning a bit, and he didn't want the hassle. He didn't want the hassle, and he wanted mostly to change. He had to change it a little bit and things like that. But I would never have a bad word to say about Barry Owen. Never in the world.
Well, it's nice to hear. It's nice to hear you've kept a good relationship with.
I haven't spoken to the man since I left the club.
Well, Barry, I think Barry might be listening. I know Matt Porter will be listening, so I think Barry better get on the phone to Tommy, don't you?
Matty Porter, he was unreal, because when he was a supporter, I've got to say, he never stopped moaning.
He never stops moaning now, he's a director.
True supporter.
He never stopped moaning. Can I speak to you? If like a supporter, I said, I'll let anybody in my office to talk to me about a game of football. Any supporter could come in. Anybody could come in, and he'd come in. Oh, you should be doing it. I said, Matt, I'm taking the team at the moment. When you're manager, you can run it. When you run, you can look after it, all right? But at the moment, I'm taking it. So, I'm sorry if you've seen something different. But the boys are trying to do their best, and that's it.
Yeah. Well,
but he was. Then he come into the game. With the club,
it was like a different person. He could see most probably what was going on and what we was trying to do and things like that.
Barry.
Yeah, hi, Tommy. Good to speak to you. Spent many years in the stands watching. How did it come that Amara Simba, ex-Paris Saint-Germain and France player, came to play at Leyton Orient? I think we had a question on the message. Sorry? Amara Simba?
Was he a good player, though?
Was
he a good...
Oh, yeah.
This is, God's honest truth, this is how it's happened. I'm ready to go to training. You know the big wooden doors out the front where they used to have the big wooden doors to come in? Clarkie said, I'll see you over the training ground. All right, I'll be over there in 15 minutes. Just warmed up, mate, and then we'll start. And as I've gone out the door, it's knock on the door. So this big, tall, I mean, he was like 6'3", bump, muscles bulging out of him everywhere. He said, my name's Amara Simba. I went, right. He said, I'd like to play for Leyton Orient. I went, right. Come into the office, let's talk, let's see what you've been doing and where you've been. So he said, I've just come back from Brazil. I've been playing seven-a-side over in Brazil. I said, I didn't even know him from Adam. So I said, where you been? He said, well, this is where I've been. I went, right. I said, let me get you some training stuff. I'll give Clarkie a ring and to say I'll fetch you over there and we'll put you on the training ground and we'll match you in with the players. He said, that's great. Thanks very much indeed. No, the man was unbelievable.
Was you impressed with his resume? You know, Paris Saint-Germain, we heard of that.
I didn't even look at that until afterwards. I could see him on the training ground and what he could do and what he was doing.
Well, that's the best way to judge him, isn't it, rather than where he's been. I mean, was he 36, 37, Tommy, was he? 36? Pardon? What was he, 36, 37?
I think he was older than that, wasn't he?
Oh, mate, he didn't smoke, he didn't drink, his body was unbelievable. And he was such an unbelievable pro. The only thing I didn't like about him, he used to score one or two goals and come across to me, Tommy, can I come off now? I said, what for? The crowd want you to score another goal. But they'd be happy for me to come off now because I scored two goals. I said, they'd be even happier if you get another one. Stay out there a bit longer.
Did he want to come off for a round of applause? Is that what it was?
Yeah, so everybody give him a clap as he came off.
I mean, there was a lot of rumours as to how old he was. I mean, we were in, 312 or 42 or 45 or whatever. Do we know how old he actually was?
No. it was like a 20-year-old.
Didn't matter.
He was like a 20-year-old.
Oh, Tommy.
And he could look after himself out there as well. People were kicking lumps out of him. He looked after himself out there.
On the subject of players, Tommy, it's Darren again. Do you mind if I ask, who's your best signing you think you ever made during your managerial career at Orient? And I'm going to ask, and you might want to answer it, who's your worst?
What's that?
Your best and your worst signings, Tommy.
My best and my worst signings. I can't say people's got on the worst signings. I go from what I can make a position stronger and better, even if he's got to fill in for somebody else. So if that person goes down who's injured in centre and midfield, can he fill his spot and we'd be just as strong? That's what I look at. So it's not who's the best and who's the worst. I try to get the best squad as possible together and go from there.
That was a diplomatic answer, that was. Yeah.
Fair enough, Tommy. Was there one sort of standout player that you didn't get? Was there a player that you chased and you just didn't quite get over the line and get in the building? Was there anyone you wanted to bring to the Orient that we never got to saw in an Orient shirt?
I wouldn't fetch anybody to the club if they didn't want to be there.
Mm.
If they didn't want to come there.
You've had the run with Orient. I mean, two times you were within a game of promotion, it didn't happen. And then you've almost immediately, within days, you were on your way to Darlington.
it was hilarious because I left late and I got a phone call that night. And then all, yeah, I went, I've got, you'll meet all the way to Donington tomorrow. Yeah, see me. I went, okay.
You've gone up to Darlington the next day. Oh, have we lost Tommy? I think his phone might have gone on him. Oh, he's over the back. Oh, back. We lost you then, Tom.
Oh.
Yeah, so, sorry, yeah. I mean, so you had a phone call that night, really, or to come up to Darlington the next day?
Yeah, to drive down to Darlington the next day. And I didn't want to be out of football at all. I didn't want to have a rest. I was all right. I just wanted to carry on and just be... And the players, I met the players, the chairman introduced me to all the players. That was good as gold. And then about a week later, he said, oh, I think I made a mistake. We shouldn't have a southerner. make your mind up. Make your mind up.
He was a bit of a character, wasn't he, more ways than one?
Yes, he was a massive character. supporters hated him.
Yeah.
I mean, they just couldn't stop shouting.
Yeah.
It wasn't good for the players. I mean, the players used to ring me at 11 o'clock at night. Coach, I said, "What's the matter?" He went, "Chairman's been on the phone. He said he's paying me too much money. He's going to take some money off of me."
Oh.
I said, "You can't do that. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'll go and see him tomorrow."
Oh dear, Barry.
So, talking to the players, Tommy, you played in the '70s. You know, primarily, which was famous for your Tommy Smith, your Norman Hunter, your Ron Harris, etc. What's your take on the modern game? What's your take on the footballers that as soon as you touch their left elbow, they're on the floor? What's your take on it?
It's the way it is now. You accept it now, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, there's some great skillful players, but they don't take a knock, do they?
I don't like it, but
no.
It's the way it is.
Yeah, it's I think they're overprotected now. Do you think money's got something to do with it? You know, there's lots of initiating contact in the box and all this and the handball role. Do you think it was a better game in the '70s in some way, or purer?
I remember my first game against Leeds. Joe Jordan.
Right.
I was playing at Leeds, and I thought, right, I know what this bloke's all about. And I've got to make sure I make contact with him before he does me. Because I looked at his arms, his shoes, and he wore a short sleeve shirt, and it was snowing. I thought, oh.
And his lack of teeth.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go. So as soon as the ball's gone up, the ball's cut up and bumped straight in the back of him, back of his head. I was going for the ball, but made contact with each other with our heads. He's gone down. I've gone down, but I've got straight back up.
Yeah.
And the referee said to me, I know what you've done. He said, he's got to do you next time before I book anybody.
That's fair.
I said, what do you mean he's got to do me? He said, well, you've just done him. He's got to do you next.
Well, wow. No, you certainly wouldn't get that nowadays.
You mentioned the referees are mic'd up now, aren't they?
I said to the referee, he ain't going to do me. I'm going to do him again before he does me.
Oh, dearie me. Tom, we could talk all night with your career. It's amazing stuff. Darren?
Just lastly, Tommy, there was a famous quote at the time when you were offered the Orient job that you walked down the M11 for it.
Yep.
That was my
club. I was there from the age of 12.
Can I say, as a fan, the minute you said that, you got yourself an extra 12 months as far as we were concerned, you know, because that was what we wanted.
Yeah, but I my next-door neighbour, when I was like, 10. I was about 10. My next door neighbour, when I lived in Elm Park, Mr. Thompson, he said, come on, boy, I'm going to take you to a proper football club and watch you. We'll watch a game of football. And we got on the train at Elm Park. We went up Marley, and then we got across to Leighton. And that's when they was in Division 1. And he sat me on the wall behind the corner flag. He sat me on the wall, and he stood behind me. The crowd was huge, and we watched the game. He said, "How did you enjoy it?" I thought, "Oh, this is great! What a good football club this is." Mm. And it was funny as I gone along, that happened to me, and I was invited there to go and train and things like that. So
you're an Orient fan, Tommy? Is that right?
Oh yeah, massive.
That's lovely to hear.
That's good to hear.
That's good to hear. And all we can say is thanks for making our 200th show a bit special, having you on here, because, you know, you're a player that so many people remember with fondness as a player, and you gave us some, I think it's be fair to say, some good and some not so good times as the manager, ups and downs. And but we had fun, didn't we, along the way? It was a roller coaster ride, as Barry Hearn always said. And but no, thanks seriously, Tommy, for taking the time to talk to us tonight. And we wish you well. And you've been coaching over in India. And what's your next plan at the moment? Where are you taking yourself?
At the moment, I don't know. I've got nothing at the moment. So I'll just see how things go along and I'll go from there.
All right. Well, we wish you all the best in anything you do. And thanks again for joining us.
That's a pleasure.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Pleasure, Tommy.
Bye.
Well, we got away with a couple of little naughty words.
I didn't hear anything.
we'll just apologise quickly, but it's a football, isn't it? I mean, it comes out sometimes.
Passion,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's passion.
What lovely
and,
though.
But, I mean, he spoke from the heart, and that's it. And good value there, Tom. I mean, we enjoyed that. And
I never knew he was an Orient fan.
Yeah,
and
you see.
It's great, isn't it?
That sits so comfortably with me on a personal level.
Yeah, it's great. We've got one in there at the moment, and we have one then.
But I mean, it's that's exactly right. I mean, you know, you've got Ross Embleton now, who's was there from a little boy, and it's Tom the same, and he spoke very well of his chairman, and which is nice, which means there's a good relationship there, and he's one of those people you could have listened to the next.
Well, it's a fascinating time he grew up in and played in and managed.
We could have covered so much more.
Well, you get these evenings with people. He's the sort of person, one or two speakers.
I mean, you might even pay the bill at the end of it?
Oh, I don't know about that, but I mean, it's you could listen for a long time with Tom, couldn't you? If he's in a bar somewhere having a chat with.
We could have done a two-hour show just for Tommy, couldn't we?
Couldn't you just? Don't forget, it's a 1 o'clock kickoff, folks, on Saturday, and streaming passes are available. Please do go to the club's website for details. £10 for a match pass. Any predictions for the score, Darren?
I'll go 2-1 Orient, I think.
I'm going to say 1-0 Orient. I mean, last night's game was did we discuss last night's game before the match? And we done a really professional performance, because Bradford come to park the bus last night, there's no doubt about that, and we got a breakthrough, and I think confidence is back in the team. I'm going to go 1-0 for the Orient.
Yeah, I mean, it was a decent goal. We'll just touch on that.
Very good goal. Great ball in, great finish. And dare I say, it was a bit of a Justin Edinburgh performance last night. We ground out a win.
Well, I mean, we just, just to touch on it, really. I mean, it wasn't a great match to watch, but does it matter? Does it matter in the end of the day? I mean, you sneak 5 or 6 1-0s on the spin. Like the whole season's transformed.
I think we're all watching enough football to know that those kind of wins count just the same, don't they?
Absolutely.
And sometimes they're actually not more of a pleasure to watch, but you need those wins. Good sides win ugly. And last night was a little bit of an ugly game.
It was. Well, folks, that's it. Come to the end of our 200th show. Thanks very much for being part of it. Hope you've enjoyed yourselves. We'll catch you again next week. Yeah.